very good day to you all. Welcome back to Marker's Eye on the Liga podcast. Slightly later this week, of course, because we had the Champions League second leg encounters on Tuesday and Wednesday. And boy, did they throw up plenty to get into this Thursday afternoon. The Europa League semi-final, quarter-final, second legs are taking place as we speak right now, and we'll be discussing that, I'm sure, next Monday in terms of Celta Vigo. But we're all about the Champions League and, of course, the El Clasico preview today on the show. Remember quickly to get onto @Marker in English on Twitter if you want to contact us with any questions for next Monday as we do the El Clasico fallout at marker.com/EN for all of your El Clasico needs this weekend. Joining me, Ollie Wilson, on the show today, two of the finest minds that Marker has to offer. First, and really, I've only just clicked up on this in terms of we're obviously the Marker podcast, and we're 1A away from having Marco Mayo every other week on the show. Mark Mayo joining us on the show today. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. It would make it be really weird having a Twitter handle be Marco Mark or Mark Marker. So I'm just kind of abstaining from that at the moment.
I'm surprised you haven't gone the whole hog, really. Dedicated your services to Marker for life and changed the name to Marco Mayo. I kind of was hoping that might be a summer plan for you this in the quiet months, considering we've got no proper content, international football to dig our teeth into.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea for an article. I'm sure that'll get some nice little viral tweets on it as a guy changes his name to the place he works.
Well, a man that's all about the the permanent changes to reflect his Spanish football love is the other man on the show today. Jason Pettigrove joining me on the show. Jason, a writer and editor at Marker in English. Pleasure to chat with you once again, mate. How you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. My middle name is Mark, so we can always change that one as well if we need to. Well,
now I'm just feeling left out. Cheers, guys. Marco Mayo and Jason Marker Pettigrove. I mean, Ollie Wilson, what's that? What is that? It's nothing. Great. Cheers, guys. Thanks very much. You can catch Mark on Twitter @ThatMarkMayo, @ThatMarkMayo, all one word. And, of course, Jason on @JasonPettigrove. Let's dive straight into it then, gentlemen. Barcelona against Juventus. The fall, perhaps, of the European footballing dynasty that has been Barcelona over the last few years, or the rise of just the Italian giants once again. 0-0 in the Camp Nou on Wednesday night, but a very impressive defensive performance by Juventus. Neymar, Suarez and Messi left without goals for 180 minutes against the Italian Stallions. Let's start with you, Mark, on this one. Thoughts at the final whistle of what this result means for Barcelona, if anything at all, if it's all hysteria or anything like that about the fall of the giants that are the Catalan club?
I think in terms of the hysteria, it's difficult, because if you were to put Barcelona up against Borussia Dortmund in the quarterfinal, I think they'd have won and they'd be in the semi-final and a lot of people would be saying how good they are. But because they got put up against Juventus, which is the worst team possible, if they'd have been up against Monaco, they'd have scored some goals. If they'd have been up against Real Madrid, I think it'd be a much closer game. But because Juventus had their sheer defensive determination, is that Italian stereotype, I think they're at their peak, Juventus, for the last decade or so, ever since they have got to the finals a few, is 2004 or so, their last Champions League final they reached. And really, it was the worst team they could have come up against at the worst time in the season as well. Could easily make a case for it being a few weeks ago they'd have won this tie. As it is, Messi's not on the best form at the moment. Neymar's discipline has been poor all season, and that's really affecting him at the moment. And Suarez is off form as well. And when those three players are out, then that's pretty much the game up for Barcelona. So those three players can return, but it's a big loss for them in terms of their season. And it's going to be a hard one to turn around so quickly, obviously, with the Clásico on the weekend.
Is that a slight injustice, saying that to you about Juventus? If Barcelona had met them a few weeks back, they might have had a very good chance of beating them. I mean, Juventus over two legs shut down what many think is the best front three in world football right now, and arguably one of the best front threes ever. And we were talking just after the PSG game and the game surrounding that, really, how good Neymar was. We were talking about him being able to take on that mantle slightly from Messi, relieve the pressure on Lionel Messi, because Neymar was coming into his own. And really, as we've read on an article on Marker.com, since that game against Malaga. It's all kind of gone to put, if you will, for Neymar. It's been a really tough few weeks that shows perhaps he isn't still quite ready to be mature enough to take over that mantle for Lionel Messi. But they came up against what is arguably one of the best defences in Europe that we'll ever see. Certainly three of the strongest centre-backs in European football in terms of Barzagli coming off the bench and Bonucci and Chiellini anchoring the heart of that four-man defence that Juventus now operate in since Conte has gone and Allegri's come in. But this is a Juventus side that surely you have to look at and say this is a crowning moment for them of taking that next step on from losing the final against Barcelona a few years ago and outplaying them over two legs. Kind of surprisingly so, but it's a great journey for them as well.
For sure, and this is quickly a point on Neymar. You're absolutely right that he's not mature enough yet for taking over Messi. It was his 15th yellow card of the season he picked up on the night, which is far, far too many for any player, let alone a striker who's maybe the best in the world. But Juventus, they have this crown on their head now. They've beaten what is arguably the best three strikers in the world over two legs without scoring. They are, as I said, at the peak of their powers, and really the team that you might well be looking to win this other than Real Madrid. And, you know, the good thing about Juventus is that I don't think they'll say this is the crowning moment of the season. They'll have no problem whatsoever looking forward to the semi-final and forgetting about this game effectively, because that's now what they've got to do.
Unfortunately for Barcelona, they won't be able to forget about this game. Some people have been a bit over the top and described it as a humiliation, the fact that they were kept out by this Juventus side in terms of scoring. But there's been plenty of talk about what has to happen now going into the future for them to be crowned in European glory once again, Jason, and there were a number of things listed on Marca.com in terms of they need to get the new coach focused, they need to renew the Messi contract, they need to revamp the fullbacks, they need to find a successor to Iniesta, easier said than done. They need to return to the Barca way of dominating aggressive possession, and they need to find alternatives and a plan B. But doesn't this seem like these are all a number of holes that have needed to be filled for a long time in this Barcelona team?
Yeah, I'd agree with that completely. And I think one of the things we saw over the two legs particularly, Juan Cuadrado's form, I thought, was excellent. Now, although ostensibly he's not a right-back, he was very much, in my eyes, playing the sort of Alves role that Dani Alves used to play at Barcelona. And there was a period some while ago when Barcelona could have signed Cuadrado. And I think, you know, perhaps maybe it wasn't the right time to sign him then, but then you look at sort of what's happened since and putting sort of square pegs in round holes. And again, with having Roberto there last night, clearly, you know, one of their main concerns is that right back slot. They need to get someone in there that plays in the style that Barcelona prefer, you know, that's attack minded, but that can defend when necessary. You know, you talk about Iniesta being replaced. He's obviously not played as much as what he would like. But then Luis Enrique has said that he needs to understand, you know, he's not getting any younger, and therefore, you know, there will be other people brought in. It's sort of quite a sweeping generalisation to even think that even if they were to get exactly what they want, that things are going to change overnight. Because if we look back to the summer last year when they brought in Andre Gomes and the other players, there was that feeling at that point that actually, for once, Barcelona had brought in young players, hungry players. And, you know, that was going to be what Barca needed. They had no strength in depth. As it's turned out, it's been precisely the opposite. But I think, yeah, the new manager coming in, I think, will probably give the team a boost. I think it will get everyone on their toes again. There are obviously some players that rarely, if ever, going to get substituted, but I just think it needs someone to come in and shake things up a bit, to identify very quickly what not just what does need to be changed, but what can be changed.
Isn't there a trouble with this Barca side, though? I mean, you look at the starting 11 from the other night against Juventus, and you touched on it just then in terms of players who will pretty much automatically keep their places. But aside from Sergi Roberto, you know, Umtiti's come in and done well this season. Pique obviously commands that centre-back role as well. Jordi Alba's an incredible fullback, despite his struggles at times this season, both with injury and in his performance. Ter Stegen in between the posts, you can't really fault him for what happened against Juventus too much. Busquets, Rakitic, Iniesta. Maybe Rakitic could lose his place, but aside, the other two, I think, hold their own fairly regularly if they're both fit and healthy. And Neymar, Suarez and Messi are never going to be dropped really as a front three either. It's very, you look at this Barca side, it's very difficult to drop any of that starting 11, really, because A, they don't have the quality of the depth, and B, these are players that will demand to play week in, week out still.
Well, they may demand it, but then they've got to be up to the task and being selected on merit. I'm not a great believer in, you know, being someone that because you've spent millions of pounds on a player, you have to play them. If you're not doing the business, you know, the reality is that managers will keep players in, but what should happen is if a player's off form, and, you know, PK has been majestic for most of the season, but there's certainly been some games that where he hasn't been at the races. You know, players need to be given that kick up the backside. You know, sharpen the focus again.
It's the other comparison, by the way, between these two that I wouldn't mind just touching on quickly is just you look at, say, that midfield of Juventus, and they've got, I don't say Khedira is old and wily, but he's certainly a player who's kind of kicking on a bit in his years. But what they've done is they've put around him a young, youthful, exuberant Dybala, who's been fantastic for Juventus since hitting the scene. Pjanic coming from Roma. Cuadrado and Mandzukic have been around Mandzukic for seemingly forever, but he's been willing to adapt and become versatile to play that left wing role. Whereas Barcelona, you've got Wiley, Busquets and Iniesta. They've put Rakitic alongside, who was one of the best central midfielders when he was at Sevilla in Europe and definitely a hot prospect, but has been iffy this season. And again, you've got a front three that I'm willing a lot of the time to really play out of position or be dropped. And Dani Alves mentioned the egos at the club before the game, you know, that would be the thing that stopped him from going back to Barcelona in some quite controversial comments. And a lot of people said, oh, the context was that's in the boardroom, that's away from the field. But do you think there are one too many egos? I'd love to hear both of your thoughts on this, in this Barcelona side, in terms of, you know, Messi's, we've talked about this on the podcast, said, I don't want to have to drop back and drop as deep as I've had to in previous and do that defensive work if I'm going to sign a new contract, all that sort of stuff. There are just one too many egos, it seems, in this starting 11 that makes a new manager's job nigh on impossible to come in, because for better in the last few years it has been a side that's almost governed itself in terms of the starting 11, in terms of the player power in that dressing room, and now new manager comes in, tries to change, that's going to be very tough indeed.
Don't you have to have ego to play at that level? I mean, it's not just Barcelona, any team at that level, if you've no ego, I mean, what are you doing? You've got to have the ego that spurs you on. I don't doubt that, you know, Messi's PR people do a great job in, you know, having him seemingly be the angel to Ronaldo's devil. But behind the scenes, yeah, of course, Messi will be the man and he will want, you know, sort of everything fed to him on a plate. But at the end of the day, it's all within the structure of the team. Everybody, you know, under whichever manager comes in, has to pull their weight, ego or not.
Mark, what about yourself in terms of the structure of this Barcelona side? Has it almost become too great a beast in terms of player power to be broken down and fixed so easily in the space of a year? Do you think it's going to be a fair bit of rebuilding needed before Barcelona gets that same chemistry as we had as a few years ago and can once again assert itself as the dominant team in European football on the continent?
Asserting itself as the dominant team is a really tough question, because if you think about what made them great to begin with, was, I mean, a lot of people would just say Messi and underline that a few times and that'll be their answer, but I think it goes back to being a little bit more complex, and I think Guardiola is the one you have to look at, is to say what he brought to the team, because the defence was not great under Guardiola. You've got to remember that even then with Puyol and Piqué they were pretty vulnerable, but because they had that dominating possession style that allowed them to, you know, you could fulfil the egos of Messi and people because they could just, you know, dominate teams. And also it got results. And Guardiola coupled those things with his own personality of, he was kind of a bit, I'd say matey with the players, but he was also very much, you know, it's my way or the highway in a large sense. He knows what he wants. And that's the problem that I think is, in looking forward, the new coach who comes in, whether it's going to be Unsue or Valverde, is going to have to act very fast and very decisively to decide which of those players are on his, you know, on his side. Is he going to start PK every week, even though he's getting on a bit? Is he going to tell Messi that he's going to have to drop back every now and then, even though he's getting on a bit? that's the toughness for them going forward, is where the coach picks his battles. Is he going to try and do what Guardiola did and potentially not do it so well? Or is he going to try and do what Luis Enrique did and take it further with a new style and with new players, which is an even more of a step into the unknown, really?
It's going to be interesting to see how Barcelona kind of rebuild and bounce back from this. El Clasico coming up on the weekend. We'll be talking about that a little later on in the show as well. But that's the end of part one. At part two, we're going to have a look at the two Madrid sides and their exploits in Europe, because both of them are through to the Champions League semi-finals. More on that when we return here on Eye on La Liga. Welcome back to the show here on Eye on the Liga, at Marker in English, at Marker in English on Twitter, where you can get your questions to us during the week, marker.com/EN, to listen and, of course, read everything that Mark Mayo and Jason Pettigrew have to put down on their thoughts on Spanish football. They're joining me on the show today. We've covered Barca. Actually, a very quick one and two-second answer on this, if at all possible, please, from both of you. Did you ever feel that Barca as a club and as their fan support kind of gave up on that tie at any point until maybe like the last 5 minutes or so? It just still felt like the Camp Nou believed that another miracle was just going to happen. I just wonder how long that will stick around, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't think the players gave up, because if you look at the stats, they had 13 shots off target. I mean, on another night, three of those could quite easily have gone in. It was just, you know, they were off with their precision. I think it was only Messi had one shot on target. So I don't think that they gave up. And I think you saw what the crowd thought of that. You know, they were still chanting and cheering at the end, which actually is quite unusual for Barcelona supporters. So I don't think anyone gave up, which is quite nice to see.
Yeah, I think Neymar lacked a little bit of discipline, but the fact that you saw him on the final whistle as opposed to like 75 minutes in some arbitrary time when he broke down in tears, that is kind of the sign that he waited till the 90th minute to do that, as opposed to, you know, having the random time.
They did give it their all. The reason why Barcelona fans generally have given up by the 80th minute or so, Jason, is probably because they're normally about 3-0 up at that point as well, and all going home for a nice bit of dinner and to enjoy the rest of their Saturday or Sunday evening. Let's talk about the two Madrid sides, though. Real Madrid, a very controversial night in the Bernabeu, to say the least. How much are we going to talk about, Mark, Victor Kasai and his refereeing decisions in this tie, and our breakdown of this victory against Bayern Munich 4-2 after extra time? And how much are we going to talk about Ronaldo's success and this Real Madrid side getting the job done?
It's hard, isn't it? The thing is, one of the things that I always think about is how when we go into these games and you think about, woe is Bayern Munich, and the idea of Bayern Munich being unjustly dealt with by referees and the world of football is, you know, foreign and alien. Because if you ask any German fan who is, you know, watching Bundesliga from a different perspective every week, they'll tell you that Bayern Munich do this to every team every week, sort of thing. And Real Madrid do it to a lot of teams in Spain as well. So it's the weird situation that the Champions League puts you in, where these are the stories as the little Bayern Munich being brushed aside by a bigger team. There were some good things that Ronaldo did, but I think a lot of them, to say good things, a lot of the game he was pretty average, and a couple of the good things were marred by refereeing decisions, and a couple of the good things were fair enough, good job.
Are we looking at inquests into these refereeing decisions? Because everybody is completely baffled, I think, by the sending off of Vidal, which was a massive turning point in the game. Yeah. on 84 minutes in terms of, you know, Bayern had just got themselves back level in the tie. They go into added time with Vidal, and you'd expect them to really test Real Madrid. And also the early booking that he got as well. 5 minutes in, first challenge, and to produce a yellow like that. And then it's been noted that Casemiro put in a number of challenges. It took him 40 minutes to get his first yellow. And perhaps through blinkers, Casemiro should have seen a second yellow a lot earlier than Vidal saw his. I mean,
can I just cut through the rubbish? Bayern Munich only managed two goals that were a penalty and an own goal. You know, at the end of the day, these sorts of games, regardless of all the controversies, which a lot of them I agree with, at the end of the day, they need to step up, and they didn't. They were very, very good for long periods, but they didn't score other than those two goals. I mean, they had plenty of chances to do so. When the chances came for Ronaldo, OK, yes, he may have been offside for one, maybe even two, but he still took the chances. And then it's down to the referee or the linesman to get the decision right. I mean, the other issue as well is obviously the onset of video assistant referees. Is where are you going to draw the line? Is it just going to be, you know, is it going to be offside? Is it going to be penalty decisions? I think until they decide exactly what's going to happen with that, all of these games, we had it with Barcelona, PSG, there's going to be decisions that affect one team or another. But to concentrate solely on that then takes away from other things in the game that should be concentrated on, like how outrageously good Marcelo was in that game. And unfortunately, it just seems as though, you know, a lot of people are bypassing that in order to talk about how poor the referee was.
And arguably deserved a superb solo goal as well in the 109th minute, instead unselfishly laying it off to Cristiano Ronaldo so he could get his hat-trick, 100 Champions League goals for Cristiano Ronaldo as well. And, I mean, I love the way they dig out some of these records for Messi and Ronaldo to break. It's like they've broken every single record, so we need to find something else for them to... And this one coming out, he's now equaled Di Stefano's Real Madrid record of 32 goals in the latter stages of the European Cup quarterfinal, semi-final and final. And Ronaldo getting his 32nd goal in the quarterfinals, semi-finals and finals of the Champions
League. It was also, he's the first player to score five goals in one quarterfinal of a Champions League season.
I mean, we're getting to the point in terms of the silly US stats that you get on things like baseball. Like, well, he hits a home run on the 4th of July, whenever it's raining, after 2 o'clock, when it's played on a Tuesday, and stuff like that. I mean,
yeah, but can Messi do that? That's the question.
Anything that they can do in baseball, I'm sure Lionel Messi can do as well. Baseball's an easy sport. Jordan played it. Tim Tebow's gone to play it. I'm sure Lionel Messi and Ronaldo could go and play it. With the core strengths that they've got and the physicality, they could be swinging the fences.
And the vision.
Everything coming in slow-mo. Messi's dealt with quicker passes from Iniesta than a fastball. I mean, come on.
The other sort of story from that particular game that I was looking forward to was whether Zidane would win the tactical battle, because it was very much like a master against pupil kind of battle with Ancelotti. And again, I don't know if all of the controversy has taken away from the fact that actually the pupil has sort of outfoxed the master for some of the game, and at the end of the day got the result.
But it's hard to say he's outfoxed the master when the master had it level and then the game was killed off by silly decisions. I think that's the trouble. I mean, you're talking about, and when you mentioned in terms of Bayern didn't do enough, but they kind of did enough. I mean, Sergio Ramos helped them, and of all the people to come up with a big late goal, it's always going to be Sergio Ramos, just at the wrong end this time after 77 minutes. But you would say, and if you're a Bayern Munich fan, you'd say, well, they did what they needed to do. They got the tie at least level in the Bernabeu. And then a poor refereeing decision has killed their chances in added time. And again, in terms of the both goals for Cristiano Ronaldo in added time that seemingly were offside. I mean, I completely agree with you that it's distracting from the great performances of Marcelo. And, I think he was a standout player. Modric did a tidy job in the heart of the pitch. And Casemiro, albeit disrupting the middle of the park with some hefty challenges, but did his job in terms of shutting down that spine of the field for Bayern Munich at times. But you can't say that the Bayern didn't do the job that they needed to do, whether it was as impressive as perhaps hoped or not. That's what you expect when, you know, a big side goes to another titanic side and plays on the road. It's never going to be easy, but they got themselves in that position that they needed to get themselves in.
You say that, but then in the first leg, from the first half, you know, Bayern Munich could have gone 2-0 up with a penalty and missed it, even though it wasn't a penalty, so we'll kind of brush over that. But the fact is that Real Madrid had a storming second half in Germany in the first leg. They could have been 3, maybe even 4-1 up going into the second game at the Bernabeu. So the fact that Real Madrid had such a good second half in the first leg, I think, kind of counterbalances a lot of the good work that Bayern Munich did in terms of the second leg.
Touché. Touche. Are we relishing at all as well the seventh straight semi-final appearance for Real Madrid? I mean, again, it's one of those stats and facts that probably goes under the radar until it actually happens, and then you say, well, the consistency of Real Madrid as a club is phenomenal. And how does this rate in terms of, is it one of the best sides that has been in a position to once again win and lift another European Cup? Because the consistency is always there. It's just getting the job done in the finale now.
I think, again, it's whether you look at it on, you know, they're just a relentless machine that, as you say, are always getting the job done. Or if you look at it in completely the opposite manner and say there's been at least 8 games this season that they've either equalised or won a game in the 89th minute or later. So does that make them a lucky team? Personally, I don't think they're a fantastic team. I think they're relentless and they get the job done. What I'm looking forward to is 2 semi-finals that are going to be epic. Whoever gets whoever, they are 4 quality teams in the semis, and I think all of the games are going to be absolute epics.
Yeah, let's hope we get a decent draw on Friday. You can't say a team's lucky if they score inside the 90 minutes, Jason. I mean, that's why we have a 90-minute game of football. Sure, if the goals come late consistently, it just shows that they've got...
No. Listen, Ollie, I didn't say that. I said, for the purpose of the argument, some people look at it like that. There have been 8 occasions when they've scored that late. Does it make them lucky? I don't think so.
What about Atletico Madrid? Were they lucky at all at the King Power? Because they were tested by Leicester City over 2 legs. Far more, I think, than many people were expecting. I mean, I could talk about the changes that Craig Shakespeare made during that game, and actually I think they were very intelligent, impressive changes that he made, albeit ones that he probably had to make. But the second half, in particular, Atletico Madrid were under so much pressure, but never looked worried. They always had their backs to the wall, but they never looked rattled or kind of scrambling about. It all still seemed almost like, yeah, we're used to playing like this. We always play against the big sides with our backs against the wall. We'll soak up the pressure. We'll get rid of it. There were some fantastic blocks, one by Hernandez in particular, to cut out one of Ulloa's strikes. It was a huge turning point in the game, as was the goal when it came straight after a really long spell of Leicester City pressure. But they were tested, Atletico.
They've got their mojo back, haven't they? I mean, they're looking a bit more like the side that we know and love rather than the side that we saw in some parts earlier on in the season. They were tested because I think Leicester had, in both games, nothing to lose. And when you're up against a side like that, they can be dangerous because, you know, no one really expected them to get this far. So they're just going to throw everything at it, the kitchen sink. And I think what you saw was, in the end, a very good defensive performance that is very typically Atletico Madrid. And it is what will stand them in good stead in the semi-finals.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think it was a fantastic performance at Atletico, purely because I don't think they really broke out of second gear for the entire tie. They kind of cruised through in a large sense, and they got their one goal in either leg, and then that dealt with it. I think the performance of Jimenez in the second leg as well, putting him in midfield, just, you know, completely killed the tie, because any sort of creativity that Leicester were hoping to create in that kind of middle third just got mopped up immediately.
Mm. As I say, that Niguez goal was just a wonderful bit of flowing forward football, which is something that has sometimes evaded Atletico Madrid. But in terms of the Champions League, it's been spoken about on this podcast on numerous occasions now that this is arguably a side that is poised for Champions League greatness after being denied so many times in the last few years. And it seemed like a side that almost knew that this is a side that is prepared and built up for almost this kind of cup competition sort of football. Because, as I say, it was all just calm and relaxed. You talk about Jimenez controlling the middle of the park. You talk about Griezmann. Every time he had it, you know, when there was space, he'd move into it quickly. But he was happy to just sit on the ball, play with it, look for support, look for a bit of help, and never seemed like a frantic rush, never kind of hoofing it clear for the sake of hoofing it in clear. There was always an intended target at the end of it. And Simeone must have been elated with the performance that they put in at the King Power. The question now is, with the semi-finals, of course, who do these sides want? Do they fancy the Madrid sides each other in the semi-finals? Do you dare test and bait the beast that is Monaco going forward, who are just unstoppable from the looks of it in terms of the attacking class that they have from some great youngsters. Kylian Mbappe looks awesome this season, both in Europe and domestically. Or do you fancy taking on Juventus and trying the old lady, arguably the best defensive side in Europe?
I think all of the ties, however they end up, there's going to be chess matches between all of them.
Yeah.
But I think they're reaching a point now. I think we're coming to almost the point where if Atletico don't win it this year, and I'm not saying they won't, they can, but if they don't win it this year, Simeone will walk away. If he loses, particularly in the final, and whether or not it's against Real Madrid again or whomever, Inter have dangled a carrot, a £50 million contract over 5 years. I can't see any way that he would stay, and you know, potentially Griezmann going. I think, you know, they're working towards this competition. This is the one I think they've wanted since the beginning of the season. I think even when they started to realise that perhaps La Liga was getting away from him, then it was a question of putting all their eggs in one basket and doing what they need to do. And you know, it wasn't an outstanding team performance. I thought Carrasco particularly wasn't great up front alongside Griezmann, but they got the job done, and that's what they'll continue to do. So, you know, I don't think they can be ruled out.
What would you like, Mark, as your semi-finals? Rather than what would these teams like themselves? What would you like as a fan, as a football writer, as a pundit?
I think fans don't want a Madrid derby final. I would like a Madrid derby semi-final. I think that'd be fantastic to have those two go at each other over two legs. And then you've got the contrast of Juve Monaco on the other side. Will be a fantastic attack versus defence. What will go on with that game? Because also, I think if you put Atletico against Juve, then you've almost got two sides that are a little bit too sort of nice and, or not nice, but defensive and sort of
nice.
Yeah, the opposite, but not offensive in any sense or enough of a sense. And then I think Real Madrid would probably deal with Monaco quite easily, because I think Monaco would get a bit of stage fright over two legs against Real Madrid that they might not get with the other two. So I would like a Madrid derby semi-final. Because, you know, the sheer... I think a semi-final occasion, especially the second leg, is almost as big as the final a lot of the times.
And I'd go for just throwing my two penneth in. I'd like to see a Real Juve semi and an Atleti Monaco semi. So, like, the immovable object against the irresistible force in both semis. Like, real old school throwback cup games.
Yeah, one side battering down the hatches in terms of trying to break down the impressive defence, and the other just trying to hold firm and hit on the counter, does sound enthralling over two legs, that's for sure. You just wonder if it becomes a Real Madrid Atletico Madrid final in Cardiff on the 3rd of June. I mean, that is going to be the mind games going into that for Atletico Madrid and their players, particularly any that have been involved in the last two finals over the last 3 years, of course. You almost worry that they might psych themselves out of it, or does Simeone use that as the carrot on the stick of, come on, we can finally do them, third time's the charm, we will get them this time in Wales. I mean, yeah, it's tantalising to think about another Real Madrid final if you're a big Spanish football fan. And I do like the sound of those two semi-finals, so I must agree with you, Jason. Right, we need to move away from the European exploits and focus on what's coming up on the weekend. Will we come back after the break? I'm going to be talking about the big one, El Clasico, the La Liga title perhaps on the line. You can pretty much wrap it up in paper and hand it over to Real Madrid if they get a win against Barcelona. Preview of that coming your way in just a moment. Champions League quarterfinal discussion wasn't enough to get our teeth into. El Clasico is just around the corner, coming up on Sunday evening, 7:45 UK time, 8:45 Spanish time. Real Madrid against Barcelona. Doesn't get much bigger than this. Sat in the burnabout, and perhaps Barca's last chance, as Iniesta has called it. It's what they have to do, is beat Real Madrid on home soil to keep the La Liga title race alive. Firstly, all sounds a little bit depressing from Iniesta. You think, obviously, they've been knocked out in the Champions League this week. and of course will surely be too far adrift of Real Madrid if they lose. But, I mean, can we not forget about the Copa del Rey here? I mean, they are in the final of that. I know it's not the be-all and end-all of trophies that Barcelona want, but it's not, you know, the final game, this, if they lose it to Real Madrid of their season, really. There's still some silverware on the line against Alaves.
There is, but out of the three, obviously they're out of one now, La Liga will still be their priority. But I think, you know, if they do lose this weekend and the pressure is all on them, the title's gone because, you know, there's been far too many games before now where they could have put pressure on Madrid and didn't. And this really is the last chance. And what's actually quite interesting is that Barcelona had a wobble at exactly this stage last season in terms of league results over a couple of week period and also being knocked out of the Champions League. And if we remember back to that point, Zidane's team even then were on a roll. And I think if the season had been maybe a week or 2 weeks longer, they'd have probably caught up with Barcelona at the top. This time it's a role reversal and Barcelona have to get those 3 points. Otherwise, they're out of it.
So it's obviously must win for Barca, as we've mentioned. What about the Madrid attitude going into this one, Mark? Because although obviously a victory would practically kill off the Catalan club, it's not a major loss if they lose to Barca or even only pick up a point at the Bernabeu, because they've still got this game in hand as well. I mean, the odds are all against Barca, and Real Madrid can afford to not put their feet up but be quite relaxed going into this El Clasico.
Yeah, they're full of confidence, and I don't blame them, because everything, you would say pretty much all the cards are in their hand, in the fact that even Barcelona aren't going to be at full strength, but Real Madrid pretty much are going to be at full strength. They've not got any major injury worries or anything to be looking at and thinking, well, that's a spot of weakness. The fact is that they can draw and that'll pretty much seal the title. They'll win and that'll definitely seal the title. And even a loss, I think they'll go on and do it, because they know that they have so many more chances, and they know that even if they slip up in a couple of games, that Barcelona are very liable to be slipping up as well.
Last time Real Madrid lost in La Liga at the Bernabeu was against Atletico Madrid back in February 2016. There'll be a lot of talk about those absent from the game going into this one, of course, with Neymar suspended for his petulance that earned him the additional game bans after clapping at the assistant referee against Malaga. Mascherano expected to be carrying an injury, Vidal and Rafinha as well. For Real Madrid, Gareth Bale is probably the main loss, with Varane and Pepe still carrying knocks as well in terms of centre-backs, but they do have just about enough depth to deal with it. Who's the biggest absentee in this game? I mean, Gareth Bale has had a horrible season with injuries, whereas Neymar is just all over the place and off the rails right now, as we mentioned already.
Yeah, I still think probably Neymar is the biggest miss, because he's a game changer on his day. And, you know, up against, they're the sort of games he's excelled in the past. Perhaps apart from his, I think it might have been his second Clásico. But, you know, Barcelona need all of their big players playing in these sorts of games, and I think by bringing in Paco Alcacer, yes, he scored I think 4 in his last 5, but you know, he's not quite at the races in terms of, you know, the speed of thought and everything else that Neymar has. He certainly hasn't got anywhere near the skill set that Neymar has. You know, Neymar is the sort of player that makes things happen in an instant, so I think missing him is going to be a big problem for Barcelona.
In terms of the battles all over the pitch then, and how these sides are going to line up, what are you looking forward to seeing, Mark, in terms of how these two teams approach El Clasico this year?
I'm very fascinated as to what formation Luis Enrique goes in, because the thing is, we're missing Neymar, is that they haven't actually got a left wing replacement. Alcacer will be out of position. I think there's a chance he might draw Jordi Alba further up the pitch and play Digne if he's available. So that sort of tactical mindset of Luis Enrique is going to be quite fascinating. And then it also comes down to how well Iniesta can cope with it as well. Is he going to be able to dominate the midfield, even though Modric, Casemiro and Kroos are all going to be gunning for his kneecaps? Or is there going to be a chance that he can still pull it off and find some space? Because we saw in the Atletico game that Griezmann was perfectly capable of finding a bit of space in the box at the Bernabeu, and I think Suarez and Messi are certainly going to be looking to do the same.
Sorry, Ollie, I'll just jump across you there. One of the tactical battles that most interests me will be with Casemiro stationed just in front of the back, sort of the centre-backs, doing a job essentially that Khedira and Pjanic did for Juve in closing down those gaps that Messi tries to thread those eye of the needle passes through and essentially pushing Barcelona out to the wings. If he can do that effectively, then, you know, as I say, Barcelona have got to play wide, which doesn't necessarily suit them. But if they can get past Casemiro, you know, Nacho and Ramos isn't the first choice centre-back pairing. So, you know, there's potentially something in there for Suarez. So I think that's going to be, you know, perhaps our Busquets plays, you know, just a bit further up, giving them a bit more of a midfield, can't think of the word, advantage.
I think Marcelo will cover that gap. You watch the Bayern Munich game. Marcelo basically played as a centre back for a lot of the attacks that Bayern Munich were having. So I think you'll find him doing the same, and it will basically mean they've got Nacho is kind of shadowed by Marcelo,
giving him a little bit of support. He's not had an ideal season, Nacho, in terms of his form this year. Interesting, the kind of cavalier attitude perhaps that some people are expecting from Barcelona, because this is their do or die moment, if you will. There's nothing left to lose. They're going to be playing Champions League football next year, bearing some sort of minor miracle disaster that allows Sevilla and Atletico Madrid to get through, and then they get knocked down the qualifying stages or something like disastrous like that. But this is kind of the gung-ho moment for Luis Enrique, who hasn't got the best record against Real Madrid. Of course, 3 wins, 1 draw, 3 losses in the 7 meetings that he's had against Real Madrid as a manager. Do you expect it to be kind of rip-roaring straight from the get-go from Barcelona, of trying to, as we mentioned previously, in terms of the Barcelona way that everybody's crying out for again, penetrative, aggressive, quick-passing football, and that for 90 minutes, basically, from the Catalan side?
I think it has to be. And I think, you know, Real Madrid also have to be at it and not go into the game with any sort of complacency, because Barcelona will take advantage. But you say about Enrique as well, and I mean, it'd be a great shame that, I mean, if they were to lose it playing poorly, obviously he'll deserve the headlines that will come his way. But for a man that sort of won the treble in his first season, the second treble, and then was, you know, lauded at some point as being even better than Guardiola because he got to 100 wins quicker than he did, etc., etc., sort of bow out in such a manner. And potentially, I mean, you know, Alaves aren't going to be a walkover in the cup final, let's not forget. It would be a sad sort of way for him to end. So I think, you know, he will send his players out all guns blazing, and there'll be an expectation from his point of view, as well as the supporters, that they do go at it and just, you know, right up until the very last whistle, they give absolutely everything. I mean, this is, you know, the biggest league game of the season for them.
Well, if that league meeting between Alaves and Barcelona doesn't scream the cup final is going to be a walkover with Barca winning 6-0 just after they both put their places in it, I don't know what does, but I see your point in terms of it's always a two-horse race in any cup final and anything can happen. Gerard Piqué as well with some lovely comments, just replying to an article on Marca about how some people were saying that, you know, the Barca fans, were they right to applaud Barcelona off the pitch in midweek after their Champions League exit? Piqué stirring the pot slightly, saying, you know, it's fantastic that Barca fans applauded us off. Madrid fans are used to booing their side even if they qualify. I mean, nothing like just trying to stir it up even more. Piqué, who's been at it all season with very open comments about either the refereeing bias, the way Madrid play, and now the having a pop at the fans as well. If it was going to be a chorus of boos when Barca stepped out before that, I don't know what it's going to be now, because they are going to want blood for Piqué this weekend.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those moments where everything that has been boiling up and sort of simmering at the little at the top of the pot for a little while is going to finally come over. But then it's one of those. It's like when Ramos went back to Sevilla earlier in the season. The game can ignite these moments so much. I can't imagine that Piqué is going to be taking any Panenka penalties in front of the Bernabeu fans, but there's going to be a good chance that there'll be a rough tackling here or there, and maybe we'll see some white hankies being blown around or something like that. But I think that's more likely to set this game alight. I don't see it being like a 6-2 or a 4-0 or any of those kind of memorable scorelines, but I do see a refereeing moment sort of defining it, and maybe a couple of red cards.
Do you find it interesting that we're not perhaps talking about Ronaldo against Messi as much as we sometimes normally would in terms of these games? And that debate's kind of just slipped away over the last few years whenever Real Madrid and Barca meet. It's become less and less about the individuals and more about what's at stake for both these two sides now. I mean, is there still that conversation being had? I know, Mark, you were involved in an article on marca.com/Ian about Ronaldo being more decisive than Lionel Messi at crunch time moments, and that's what they were talking about in terms of his performances in Europe in the latter stages of the Champions League, especially this season, of course. But it's not all about these two going into a game. It's quite nice, for once, to not be seeing headlines that are based around these two's rivalry.
Yeah, there's far more variables this year. If you think about, we've talked about the coaches, the tactics, the formations, all of these for so many years have been a given. You knew exactly how Guardiola's or Mourinho's Real Madrid are going to come out, and they would come out with Ronaldo versus Messi. Pretty much, you know, Messi gets the hat-trick in March 2014, or Ronaldo scores the goal last year in the 85th minute, and those were the defining moments. But now I just think that Ronaldo and Messi aren't in the game for 90 minutes, and they kind of drift in and out far more than they used to, and that opens the door for other people and other mistakes, more importantly, to be made.
Yeah, and the changing of the guard in sports journalism writers as well about this. It's just funny how in the last few years, you know, Mark, Jason, coming to the forefront of Spanish football journalism, talking less and less about the pettiness between Ronaldo and Messi. Just saying, you two might be the game changers that Spanish football journalism has needed, Jason.
Well, we do our best. let me throw just a couple of quick things at you before we sign off as well. Real have only kept 2 clean sheets in the last 13 games, but they've scored in 55 consecutively. So I think we're going to see goals, whether from Ronaldo or Messi or otherwise. So I think it's certainly got... It's not going to be a defensive game, put it that way. The other thing I just want to pick you up on, Ollie, Alaves, you seem to forget they beat Barcelona at the Camp Nou earlier on in the season. So it's not a given that they're going to walk all over them.
Touché, sir, touché. Jason, then, Mark, before we leave El Clasico, who's going to win it? More importantly, really, at the end of the day, that's all that matters, the 3 points. Which way is it going?
I'm fence-sitting 2-2.
Oh, fence-sitting. Hate that. What about yourself, Mark?
0-0.
Has
there ever been a 0-0 Clasico? I'm going to have to have a quick look. So this could be the year. It wouldn't surprise me. I'm probably going to... Real Madrid are going to win it, realistically, 3-1.
A 0-0 Clasico might be. I mean, obviously, you can have fantastic 0-0s. The last time we saw a 0-0 in El Clasico, who says I'm not prepared for some of these things, was back in 1989, from what I can see in my research. 1989, correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, yeah, no, I've got
that
1st of April.
April 1989. Please don't correct me if I'm wrong. But that, for to me, is the last time there was a 0-0 draw in El Clasico. That was at the Camp Nou as well. Gentlemen, a quick word on the rest of La Liga, particularly Tony Adams' hiring at Granada. He was then put in the spotlight for his first game as the Granada manager on the Sunday night. And anybody taken aback, confused slightly by the Tony Adams hiring? I mean, it didn't help them too much against Celta Vigo in his first game with the 3-0 loss. Gentlemen, where did this come from? Because Tony Adams has been more renowned for his managerial exploits in Qatar than anywhere else, really.
Yeah, I think a bit like the Peter Lim thing and Gary Neville over at Valencia. Obviously, Adams is involved with the owners of the club. I think, again, possibly like Neville, a bit of a left-field appointment. But I don't think... He needs to be judged on results, not, you know, stupid YouTube videos of him dancing around in training being set to music. That's, you know, a bit that's a bit disrespectful, to be honest. Give the guy some credit. You know, he was a colossus at Arsenal. If he doesn't get the job done, Granada go down, you know, he'll be sent on his way. At the end of the day, the owners have made the decision. He's going to have a good crack at it. He's not got off, you know, by any means in the best possible way, and he's got some very hard games coming up. But look, give him a chance.
I mean, I'm not saying it's an impossible job, but it's extremely tough, particularly for an experienced manager at this level, to as a task to take on for Granada, Mark. It's surprising that he would take it as well when it seems far easier for it to be a failure on his resume than it is to be a shining light and a positive, if you will.
I don't think he's really planning on having a proper career as a coach, if I'm honest. It sounds like he's basically some sort of advisor to the Chinese owners, and that he's going to continue being an advisor once this finishes. I don't think he really has serious ambition anymore. He used to have it, but not anymore to be a coach. And I mean, they're down, that's pretty much that. So he's not going to keep them up, and then he'll move on and do whatever the Chinese owners want him to do next.
Which I doubt will involve many more YouTube musical training video appearances, as Jason mentioned. Right, gents, we are going to leave it there for today. Plenty of action coming your way, of course, in La Liga this weekend, starting with Sevilla against Granada on Friday night. Malaga against Valencia is a tasty tie. Villarreal take on Leganes, Osasuna Sporting Gijon, and Espanyol Atletico Madrid wrapping up the Saturday before Sociedad against Depor, Celta Vigo against Betis, Las Palmas against Alaves, and then El Clasico Sunday night, Eibar against Bilbao, the Monday evening fixture. Thanks very much, gentlemen, for your time. As always, much appreciated. Mark, at that Mark Mayo on Twitter, thank you so much. It's been a long time since we spoke, fella.
Yeah, cheers, man. It's nice being on.
And Jason at Jason Pettigrove, big thank you for your time, as always, Chief, as well.
Thanks, Ollie. Speak to you soon.
Remember to get on at Marker in English on Twitter, at Marker in English, and marker.com/EN. Marker.com/EN. This has been Eye on the Liga, the official Marker in English podcast. We will be back, hopefully, on Monday to take a look at all the goings on from El Clasico and to see if we still have a title race on our hands. In the meantime, a very good weekend. Enjoy El Clasico, enjoy the football, and keep an eye on the Champions League draw on Friday as well. Will Real against Atleti turn up in the semi-finals or the final? We'll find out. Have a good one.